We've been looking at Acts chapter 2. We are to the point of Acts chapter 2, verses 23 and 24. This is, if you will remember, where Peter, he has talked about the fact that he and the others are not intoxicated. He says it's just the third hour of the day. And then he talks about the miracles that Jesus did in verse 22. Then in verse 23, he was delivered up by the determinate counsel, the foreknowledge of God. He was killed by lawless men. And then in verse 24, he flips over to the resurrection. And that's where we are. Today, it's no secret that it's Easter, so a lot of people are thinking about the resurrection. I didn't time this, and this is not an Easter study, but I do think that the resurrection deserves a lesson in and of itself, so that's what we're going to do today. And one of the things that I want to start with, we'll have some reading here, actually two things. There are seven different verbs in the book of Acts which talk about the death of Jesus. Seven different words that describe how Jesus died, which I think is kind of interesting. So if you bear that in mind, Jesus' death is a big deal. But there's the second half of the story, and that is the resurrection. When you start looking at the New Testament, and especially the book of Acts, one of the things that you find is that the resurrection was something that Christians were talking about, and they talked about it again and again and again. They just could not get off the topic of the resurrection. And I think that's practical for our day and time. But before we get to the practical part, let's do kind of a quick survey of the book of Acts. I want to show you just how often this comes up, the various contexts, and even in some respects, how much time passes from point A to point B. Let's get some helpers here, and the quicker that we can go through this, that will leave more time for the rest of the material that at least I want to try to highlight most of it, but we can't get it all in. Acts chapter 2, we've got the information about the resurrection in 24. Who wants to skip down a little bit and read verse 32? All right, that'll be Lois. And then after that, we'll take a look at Acts chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, and then we'll also push you down to verses 13 through 15. Acts 3, who wants to be on deck for that? All right, Bonnie. Let's start with Lois, you, verse 32.
This Jesus God raised up again, to which we are all witnesses.
Okay, very interesting. Acts 2:24, Jesus was raised from the dead. About 10 verses later, Peter says, once again, Jesus has been raised from the dead. The resurrection is a big topic on the day of Pentecost, Acts chapter 2. And Peter says, we are all witnesses of that. Next chapter, we have a miracle that's being performed in Acts chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. Let's not read those verses. I'm just going to mention that. You can kind of skim those. But there is a great miracle that's performed a few days later, after Pentecost, Acts 3, 1 through 7. And then let's see what the topic is in Acts chapter 3, verses 13 through 15. Bonnie?
The God of Abraham and of Isaac and Jacob, the God of our fathers, hath glorified his son Jesus, whom he delivered up and denied him in the presence of Pilate when he was determined to let him go. But he denied the Holy One and the just and desired a murderer to be granted unto you, and killed the Prince of Life, whom God hath raised from the dead, whereof we are witnesses.
Okay, thank you. These two ideas that we started with, Jesus died, he was killed, you had a hand in it. But that's not the end of the story. What else happened? He was raised up. So Acts chapter 2, two times the resurrection. A few days later, Acts chapter 3, verse 15, he was raised up from the dead. Now, it's on this same day, just a little later, that we are now looking at some priests and Sadducees. They're upset. Acts chapter 4, verses 1 through 2. And the reason for that is given in Acts 4, 1 to 2, Acts chapter 4, verses 19 and 20. Somebody want to continue that reading in that next chapter? Acts 4, 1 and 2, and then also verses 19 and 20. Carol? Okay, so you have specifically there given what they were talking about. We're talking about the resurrection, Acts 2, Acts 3, Acts 4. And how did that make the Jewish officials feel, good or bad? They are unhappy. We don't want to hear about that resurrection stuff. All right, so that's what they're preaching. Now let's move down, Carol, if you would, verses 19 and 20. And then we'll ask you to read 33, but I'll give you that verse again, 19 and 20 right now. Okay, let me pause you right there. What do you think they had seen and heard? A resurrected Christ. And so we can't stop speaking it. Well, that's what we've seen thus far.
Did you say 33?
If you would now too, uh-huh.
And with great power the apostles were giving witness to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and abundant grace was upon them all.
Okay, so we've not only got teaching about the resurrection. Now we've got apparently miracles associated with the resurrection as well. You can just imagine somebody says, well, how do I know the resurrection is true? How do I know you're not just telling me a story? Remember what we said about miraculous gifts, Mark 16:20? They were given to what? To confirm the word. Well, that's exactly what we find. And part of that word that was being taught was the resurrection. So Acts 2, Acts 3, Acts 4. Now, we have to skip some chapters, getting over now to Acts chapter 10. Anybody remember, and this is an easy way to recall this if it's not in your head, but about how many years between Acts 2, Day of Pentecost, and Acts 10?
10.
All right, Acts 10, 10 years from the Day of Pentecost, Acts 10. And what's happening in Acts 10? Who's the fellow who is prominent in this chapter? Household of Cornelius, and he, of course, would not have been a Jew. He would have been a Gentile. So about 10 years go by. Now, you would think after 10 years, somebody might change the message, right? We've preached that resurrection sermon long enough, and we're not going to talk about it anymore. Well, let's see what happens when Peter ends up at the household of this Gentile, and let's see what he talks about. Acts 10, starting with verse 39 and reading down through verse 42. Who wants to take care of it? Acts 10, 39 to 42. Stan?
And we are witnesses of all things which he did both in the land of the Jews and in Jerusalem, whom they slew and hanged on a tree. And God raised up third day and showed him openly, not to all the people, but unto witnesses chosen before of God, even to us, who did eat and drink with him after he rose from the dead. And he commanded us to preach unto the people and to testify that it is he which was ordained of God to be the judge of the quick and the dead. To him give all the prophets witness that through his name whosoever believeth in him shall receive remission of sins.
Okay, once again, Peter says, I have a message for you. The message is Jesus died. He was raised from the dead. God prearranged, so he decided who the witnesses were going to be. Jesus ate with us. Jesus drank with us. There is the resurrection. And that's one of the first things that he preaches, even though he's been preaching that message for an entire decade. So that's very, very fascinating as you start to unfold this in the book of Acts and just see how important the resurrection is. Antioch of Pisidia, we have Paul and Barnabas going there, and let's see what they preach. Acts 13, verse 14. A couple chapters later, who wants to take care of it? Acts 13, verse 14. Bonnie?
But when they departed from Perga, they came to Antioch in Pisidia and went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and sat down.
Okay, so they go into a Jewish synagogue, they sat down, verses 28 and 29, if you would, too.
And see, though they found no cause of death in him, yet desired they Pilate that he should be slain. And when they had fulfilled all that was written of him, they took him down from the tree and laid him in a sepulcher.
Okay, so they're laying things out. There was this Jesus, they're going through his death in this area, Antioch of Pisidia, now verses 30 to 33. Same chapter.
And God raised him from the dead, and he was seen many days of them which came up with him from Galilee to Jerusalem, who are his witnesses unto the people. And we declare unto you glad tidings, how that the promise which was made unto the fathers, God hath fulfilled the same unto us their children, in that he hath raised up Jesus again. As it is also written in the second psalm, thou art my son, this day I have begotten thee.
Okay, they lay it out. Jesus was raised from the dead. That was a message that was still going to the Jewish people more than 10 years after we have the day of Pentecost. Let's flip over to Acts chapter 17. We'll come back to this chapter in just a little bit, but for now we want to pick up some verses that we'll not be using later. Paul here is reasoning with some more Jewish people. This time we have the Jews at Thessalonica. Acts chapter 17, verses 2 and 3 is where we start. Who'd like? All right, Steve.
Then Paul, as his custom was, went into them, and for three Sabbaths reasoned with them from the Scriptures, explaining and demonstrating that Christ had to suffer and rise again from the dead, and saying, this Jesus whom I preach to you is the Christ.
Okay, he is the Christ. He did die, but he's been raised from the dead. So they are spreading this message all over the map. There has been a resurrection, and it involves Jesus. Then Paul goes to the place of Athens and speaks to some people. who are somewhat receptive, somewhat not receptive, and then some actually believe. Acts chapter 17, verse 18. Steve, you want to read that too, since you're probably pretty close to that, Acts 17, 18?
Yes, sir. Then certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him, and some said, "What does this babbler want to say?" Others said, "He seems to be a proclaimer of forbidden gods, because he preached to them Jesus and the resurrection."
Okay, isn't it interesting as you start to look through the book of Acts, resurrection, raised from the dead. If you just kind of read through the book of Acts, you might not pick that up. But when you start to actually or specifically look for that, all of a sudden you have to stand back and say, wow. I mean, I never realized that it was in there this much and over such a protracted, over such a long period of time.
And there were doubters from the very beginning.
Yes, you're exactly right. Paul begins a little later to face some opposition and some accusations, and let's see how that gets handled. Acts 23, that'll be Acts 23:6, and then three chapters later from Acts chapter 26, verses 22 and 23. Who wants to take care of that first one for us? Acts 23:6? All right, Lois, and then who wants to take care of number two? Acts 26, 22 and 23. Acts 26, verses 22 and 23. Our helper? All right, then I'll be back to Stan. Thank you. Let's start with Acts 23, verse 6.
But perceiving that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, Paul began crying out in the council, "Brethren, I am a Pharisee, a son of Pharisees. I am on trial for the hope and resurrection of the dead."
Okay, there again, Paul, he's brought before accusers. He knows that half the group believes in a resurrection, half doesn't, but he brings it up and splits the assembly. But he says, "I'm on trial for what? I believe in the resurrection." Well, there would have been some people who would have said, "Hey, you're a good guy." The other half would have said, you're a false teacher, you're a heretic. But even when it was time to meet some accusations, the resurrection came up. Then Acts chapter 26, 22 and 23.
"Having therefore obtained help of God, I continue unto this day, witnessing both to small and great, saying none other things than those which the prophets and Moses did say should come, that Christ should suffer, and that he should be the first that should rise from the dead, and should show light unto the people and to the Gentiles."
Okay, resurrection message is preached. I'm going to, because we're a little limited on time today, I'm going to ask you to read verse 24 now. Kind of take that in advance.
"And as he thus spake for himself, Festus said with a loud voice, Paul, thou art beside thyself. Much learning doth make thee mad."
Okay, so there's talk about a resurrection, verses 22 and 23. And then in verse 24, as an official hears that teaching, he says what? "You believe in resurrection, you are?"
"Mad."
Okay, crazy, mad, insane, off the rocker, so to speak. So you do have multiple reactions to the resurrection, and that's where I want to go next. Anything that you want to add or ask before we kind of switch gears a bit? Okay, let's flip over to Acts chapter 17. Here you have some people who were from a non-Hebrew background. They would have been from a Greek or Gentile background. Let's see what we find. I'll start with verse 30 and read down through most of the end of the chapter. "The times of ignorance therefore God overlooked. But now he commandeth men that they should all everywhere repent, inasmuch as he hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he hath ordained, whereof he hath given assurance unto all men, in that he hath raised him from the dead." So there again is the resurrection message. "Now when they heard of the resurrection of the dead," some what? Some mocked, but others said what? "We will hear thee again." And then 33, "Thus Paul went out from among them. But certain men clave unto him and believed." Starting with that last response, how would you understand that? Certain clave unto him and they believed. That's a way of saying they became
disciples.
All right, they became disciples, they obeyed the gospel, they became Christians. Then you have the second group backing up just a little bit. They said, "We're going to hear you again about this." How would you understand that? Okay. I think that there probably were some people like that today. That's interesting. I've never heard that before. We're open to hearing some more information. Now, we may not believe you in the end, but at least we can have another study. It's also possible in that second group to maybe include another response. We'll talk again. We'll hear you again. When do people sometimes say that?
Procrastinating.
Yeah. Or it's a polite no. We'll get together. We'll talk again. 25 years later, the phone's not rung and you've not gotten a letter in the mail. So sometimes, you think people in the first century could have been polite like that? We'll hear you again. We'll talk again soon. We'll come and visit services with you. Anybody ever hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So whether they had good hearts and they want to hear a little bit more, they're putting it off. There is some procrastination there. Then you have the other reaction, and what's that? That was number three. Backing up a little bit, we've got the sort of neutral response. And then if we back up, some mocked. Now that's interesting because as Luke describes that, he uses the imperfect tense. What do we remember about the imperfect tense? That is, that's ongoing action. So it's not that they just mocked and said, oh, you're crazy, but they continued to mock. They perpetually mocked. To them, we might say that this was a big joke. And that's kind of where we go back to what Stan had read in Acts chapter 26. The official there, he said, you are mad, you are crazy. I want to give you this information too, and then we'll see if there's something you want to ask or add, and then we'll turn the balance of our time to the other area that we want to focus on. The idea about returning from the dead did not originate in the first century. Job sort of had that idea. He said, if a man dies, will he live again? So you see some seeds of a resurrection concept there. But also if you go back and you look at some of the Greeks, I'll pull out this quote for you and share it. The Greeks disdained the idea of a bodily resurrection. There was a Greek poet about 500 years before Jesus came into the world. He cited the god Apollo. G there is a small g, of course. False god Apollo. And the god Apollo supposedly said, once a man dies and the earth drinks up his blood, there is no resurrection. Now, we probably don't have a lot of people saying that kind of thing today or poets writing that kind of thing today, but I do believe that there are a lot of people who have that idea. Certainly, if you are from an atheist standpoint, an agnostic probably would say, once you're gone, you're gone. You're like the dog, and there's not going to be any kind of afterlife for you, and certainly there will be no resurrection. But that's not the message that was preached. I do want to give you this quick point of application before we get into the other matters. If you are ever, based on what we've seen in the book of Acts, if you are ever in a conversation where it just looks like you can't win, or you're kind of stuck, or maybe a person is skeptical, do you think you could just, go from here all the way into left field and say, what do you think about the resurrection of Christ? Think you could ask that question of somebody? I mean, they're being hostile, they're not being too cooperative as far as having congress. You think you could just jump ship and say, what do you believe about the resurrection of Christ? I gave you an illustration a couple weeks ago. I think the guy's name is Lehman. He's got the child response system, which he says if you've got a misbehaving child, the Dr. Lehman system, you can ask a child and stop a temper tantrum. There might be a time in your life where you can use this to just kind of stop a person in his tracks. Oh, you know, you are religious and that's not true, this, that, and the other thing. What do you think about the resurrection of Christ? And I mean, just really knock the socks off. And what? The resurrection of Jesus. Do you believe it was really raised from the dead? And just watch the person begin to stutter and get red and say, did you not understand my question? Do you believe in the resurrection of Christ? You might be surprised at the reaction you get. I'll tell you that skeptics, if you find anybody who is moderately informed as a skeptic, and we'll develop this a little bit later, but they will likely not deny that Jesus lived. They'll grant that. And once you grant that Jesus lived, it's going to follow that Jesus died, right? And most are willing to grant that Jesus was buried somewhere. All right, so if you've got someone who lived and someone who died and something happened to the body, then now you've opened up the path to talking about the resurrection of Christ. So this is, I think, as I reflect back on some of the work that I've done in this country and outside this country, that this is probably one of the most underused aspects of the Christian faith, and that's probably a big mistake for us. So if you've not talked to people about the resurrection of Christ or asked people if they believe in the resurrection of Christ, that's something that I encourage you to kind of rethink as far as how you interact with people. And the reason for that is twofold. The resurrection of Christ, there are only two possibilities. Number one, it's either yes or true, or it is no or false. If it's no or false, then we, of course, have no standing, and we're all wasting our time. If, however, Jesus was really raised from the dead, what's that mean? What's the significance of that?
Everything's true.
Okay, that would be a great point to make. Everything is true. What else could we add to that?
You have to make a choice.
All right. All are accountable to him. And if he really has been raised from the dead, he really is King of Kings, he really is Lord of Lords, and you have an obligation to submit to him. He gives you free will. There's free choice. But you are under authority. And if you reject the authority of Christ, you will one day stand before him in judgment. Now that's a pretty powerful message, and a person might, just as we heard from Acts chapter 26, well, you're crazy, you're insane, and I'm not going to submit to him, and all those other things. But you have given a person a very stark, a very drastic choice at that point in time. And to me, there has got to be a reason why those apostles, Acts 2, they started with the resurrection. 10 years later, Acts chapter 10, they're still talking about the resurrection. And as they go, Acts chapter 17, to the Greeks, as they go to Antioch of Pisidia, as Paul is charged by some people for various things, he returns to the subject of the resurrection of the dead. So that is a sword which I think a lot of people, including some very good preachers, have left sheathed, but that needs to be pulled out and that needs to be used a lot more often than it is. And it's not difficult to offer the evidence, to go through the evidence which lays out the resurrection of Christ. Okay. Anything that you want to add or ask before we turn our attention to a related matter? Okay. What do we have? 15, 27 minutes. We can't lay out everything about the resurrection of Christ. But we can, I think, go through and summarize some items which are probably going to be very, very helpful to us. Some things that maybe at least we can get a general overview of our mind. And remember, we've talked about the fact that nobody's going to deny, if they have any knowledge at all, that Jesus really died, that he really lived, that he really died, and that he really was buried. And most people will also grant that he was found in a tomb. Let's take a couple of quick points from John and see what we find as far as John. Now remember, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are Bible books. But at the same time, these are also people who wrote a record way back when. And they are not the only ones who wrote a historical record, but they are, as we're looking at them this morning, historians. They're recording facts. And those facts can be checked and so forth. Let's start with John chapter 20. We'll look at verses 1 and 2. And then we'll also have somebody lined up for a couple verses from Matthew 27. Who wants to be our Matthew 27 reader? We'll start with Matthew 27, 60. That'll be Gary. John 20, though, is where we begin. John chapter 20, verses 1 and 2. Who wants to take care of that for us? John 20? All right, Betty, thank you. John 20, the first two verses. Here would be a good place to begin with somebody. Do you believe, again, Jesus came, Jesus died, and he was in a tomb? Yes. All right, do you believe the tomb was empty? Yes or no? Well, if you believe that the tomb was not empty, where would you go with that? Somebody says, I believe all those things, but I believe that the tomb was not empty. I believe the body was there. Yeah, I mean, well, okay. Where's the data about that? I mean, okay, that should have ended it, right? I mean, if you've got a body, then that pretty much eliminates a resurrection, doesn't it? You can say, here he is. Here they are. So nobody's going to go, well, yes, okay, I'll agree that the tomb was found empty. All right, let's start at that place. We've got an empty tomb, and most people will grant that. Matthew 27, let's start with verse 60, Gary. 27:60.
And laid it in his own new tomb, which he had hewn in the rock, and he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulchre.
Okay, we don't know exactly how big the stone was, but we do know the description that's given here, it was great. All right, it was big. It was a large, it was a great stone. Some have estimated it being a couple tons. So if you've got a ton or two tons, anybody, the boulder out there, I don't know how much that weighs, but if you can imagine the boulder out there in the parking lot, somebody just trying to push that an inch or two, you know, that'll probably send you to the hospital. So you imagine a ton or a two-ton rock trying to push that out of the way. But that's not all that we have to contend with. The tomb where Jesus was, Matthew 27, let's move down to 62 and read down through 66, Gary.
Now the next day that followed, the day of the preparation, the chief priests and Pharisees came together unto Pilate, saying, Sir, we remember that the deceiver said, while he was yet alive, after 3 days I will rise again. Command, therefore, that the sepulcher be made sure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away, and say unto the people who have risen from the dead, so the last error shall be worse than the first. Pilate said unto them, Ye have a watch, go your way, make it as sure as ye can. So they went and made the sepulcher sure, sealing the stone and setting a watch.
Okay. Several years ago, somebody told me that a certain person had gone to the hospital. And it was fairly late at night, 10, 11 o'clock, most of the hospital people had gone away, and I went to the hospital, and things were kind of dark up in that area. And a person said, no, we don't have that individual here. And I said, I got a call from a family member, and they said it was this hospital. And I guess I must have been pretty convincing, because the person started to look around, and, here and there, and, maybe a patient stuck over here. And I can still remember that nurse saying, we don't lose people too often, but every once in a while that's happened. So we're searching for this person. I can't find the family members. And she said, are you sure? And I said, well, let me call the family. And the family said, oh, which hospital did we tell you? And I said, this one. They said, oh, no, we're over here. And I said, okay. I said, that's fine. I'll be over there in a little bit. And I went back and told the nurse. I said, it's fine. I was given the wrong hospital. So, you don't have to call security or the police or anybody. We're okay. But that taught me that when it comes to people, whether it's the living or the dead, people pay attention to where the body goes. And that's always been true. I mean, you know where the body goes. But in this case, it's not just that we have a body. We have a high-profile body, don't we? And not only do we have a high-profile body, it's not the local funeral service that's involved. Who's involved in Matthew 27, 62-66? It is the government. The government is involved with the body of Christ. And the government says, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to, number one, we're going to make sure that there is a... Well, okay, we're going to take care of the good body. But we're going to have a seal. And we're also going to have a... We're going to have a guard. All of those, once you start opening up the details, whether you're getting these details from the scriptures, Matthew through John, primarily, or you're going to some historical sources, these are some things that you want to pay attention to. Anybody back in John chapter 20? John 20, by chance? All right, let's look at verses 3 through 8, Carol. And then let's head somebody over to Matthew 28:4 in a minute. Who wants to take care of Matthew 28:4? All right, Lois, 28:4 from Matthew. John 20, 3 through 8, though, first. Okay, a couple of points here. Number one, you have an empty tomb, nobody there, but what's left behind? Well, the grave clothes, including the face cloth. That's kind of interesting. If you're trying to get out of a fire, get out of a situation, escape from something, time is of the essence. And, maybe you've got some clothes on and maybe some things need to be removed. You're going to pay less attention to the clothes. The first priority is to get the body out. If you've got this tomb which is being guarded, and you're trying to sneak past the guards, even if that were possible somehow, you're not going to take time to go ahead and fully unwrap anybody, let alone do what? When we look at the face cloth, it was folded up, wrapped up, and set in its own little place. When you are taking the time, anybody ever had, maybe we'll just use this illustration, anybody ever had somebody come over, maybe a company, and for whatever reason, you felt like you had to put some clothes away, or maybe you had some towels that needed to be stuffed away. Anybody ever had that situation? All right. What do you do with the towels? What do you do with the clothes? Put them in the basket. Just throw them in there and stick them in the closet. Or take the towels that have been washed and throw them in the dryer, And they're all crinkled and they're all crumpled. So we know, based on how we interact with people, sometimes that when time is of the essence, folding stuff up neatly, it just doesn't work that way. So we have that little detail, which is odd. And then we have this in Matthew 28, verse 4.
And the guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men.
Okay, now that seems odd. Here you have guards, trained men, who are terrified. Absolutely terrified. So terrified that they become like dead men. Will you read some more, Lois? Let's stay in that same chapter and look at verse 11.
all that had happened.
Okay, so you had these guys who are terrified initially, and then as the report continues, they're finally able to start functioning, and they go into the community, and they pick out the chief priest, and they start telling them some stuff. Well, okay. Now, you have to continue the story, verses 12 through 13, to see what the reaction was on the part of the chief priests.
And when they had assembled with the elders and council together, they gave a large sum of money to the soldiers and said, "You are to say, his disciples came by night and stole him away while we were asleep."
Okay, I'm going to have you read another one in just a second. But here you have scared guys finally coming, telling the chief priests this story. And the priests, after they hear it, what's their thinking? Yeah, they're not saying, well, the body's got to be here there. Let's just go get it. There was nothing in it for the soldiers to go ahead and try to hide away the body, that kind of thing. So it's kind of like, okay, they're putting the pieces together, and we need to go ahead and concoct this kind of story that the disciples came by night. Well, one of the obvious problems with that is what? I was sleeping, and you broke into my house. Well, how do I know that? Now, this is pre-security camera time. How do I know she broke into my house when I was sleeping? I can't know that. Why? My eyes were closed. Well, I guess some people sleep with the eyes open. But anyway, I was sleeping. I was not aware of the actions. So on the surface, on the face of it, that does not make any sense at all. But they said while we were sleeping, somebody came, the disciples came, and they stole away the body. Well, that becomes problematic for some reasons. You go back to the grave clothes that we talked about in John chapter 20. You go back to the big rock and so forth. You go back to the fact that the disciples were scaredy cats by and large. And it just doesn't make any sense. Verse 14, and then we'll also look at the verse after that, 15. But let's start with Matthew 28, 14 now.
"And if this should come to the governor's ears, we will win him over and keep you out of trouble."
Wow, can you imagine that? Some guy died, some guy was buried, and now at this point in the story, if this reaches the ears of the governor, what kind of case is this? So when you start considering all the little details, you have to say, hey, something very, very odd is going on. And then verse 15.
"And they took the money and did as they had been instructed, and this story was widely spread among the Jews and is to this day."
Now here is another crucial verse. Matthew talks about this story as far as the guards being told, here's a bunch of money, you just say that you guys were taking a nap, sleeping, and the apostles of Jesus, the disciples of Jesus, they came along and stole the body. Matthew says that story was told for how long? Till this day. What would that day have been? All right, the day he wrote the book. Now, when did Matthew write? We don't know exactly. The earliest that I think we can date Matthew is probably 50 A.D., and the latest is probably going to be 70 A.D. because Jesus, the destruction of Jerusalem and there hadn't happened yet. So sometime prior to 70 A.D., likely no earlier than 50 A.D. Now let's see if we can piece that together a little bit. The church was established about when? A.D. 30. So here's A.D. 30. Matthew writes, based on what we can tell, no earlier than A.D. when? 50. So 50 minus 30 is 20. So for at least 20 years... And if the church was written in, or the church was established in around 30 A.D., and Matthew wrote maybe 70 A.D. or just before that, how many years would that be? 70 minus 30 is 40. So somewhere between 20 and 40 years, maybe for close to a decade, people were telling this story. That the disciples came along and stole the body. And yet, as that story is circulated for what I believe is at least a minimum of 20 years, what's happening, as we saw earlier from the book of Acts, are people saying, oh, that resurrection, that's just a hoax. People hallucinated. The guards got the body. What's happening? Thousands and thousands and thousands of people are becoming Christians. People who were back there and able to go and interview people when it came time to checking out the details of the resurrection story. And the significance of that is really, really important. And then, if that's not enough, back there in the book of Acts, one of the passages that we didn't read, Acts chapter 6, verse 7. Luke may have included this for a lot of different reasons, but here may be one. Acts 6, 7 says, "And the word of God increased, and the number of the disciples multiplied in Jerusalem exceedingly, And then what else is said as we look at that? A great company of the priests also became obedient to the faith. Do you believe that those Jewish priests would have become obedient to the faith? They would have given up the religion of Judaism had they not been convinced that Jesus had been raised from the dead? No! That was their job. That was their livelihood. That's what they believed. This is the law of Moses. This is the way of Moses. But numerous priests were willing to turn from the faith as they were in a context where the resurrection of Christ was being preached again and again and again. Anything you want to add or ask overall that we've talked about thus far? Betty? The witnesses, I wish Bessie were here. I can't give you a definitive answer on what they believe concerning the resurrection, but there certainly are religions who have the idea that Jesus, yes, a great man, but as far as being raised from the dead, no. But this is one of the things that sets Christianity apart, you know, that we have not a dead Savior. Islam, of course, would point to Muhammad, the great prophet, but he's still in the grave. But with Christ, he's the one who is risen. Gary?
Do the guards know that the guards are guardsmen of the government, right? Do they normally speak to the chief priests, or is that kind of a...
You'd have to go back and try to find some outside historical sources for that. But what comes to my mind, for example, is you imagine a factory worker, and the CEO of the company is sitting upstairs. You know, and nobody ever comes into his office. I mean, unless, you know, that would just put the fear of God maybe into a shop employee. Let's say that it's a young employee, and, 19 years old, and guy up there, the CEO, is 50-something, and, you know, he just doesn't want to see that guy. It just terrifies him. I want to stay down here in my work area, and everything is good. But there's a fire, or there's an active shooter. What do you think that 19-year-old is going to do as he's running by? You think he's going to think, oh, hey, that's the CEO, and I better not knock on his office and say there's a fire, there's a shooter? He's going to be telling the first guy he can find, and it doesn't matter if that's a coworker, it doesn't matter if that's going to be the CEO. And that's the impression that I have here. It's, you know, we were like dead men. You know, we were guarding this guy. How much they knew about Jesus, that's not given, but, you know, soldiers talk and soldiers hear things, so presumably they knew at least a little bit about Jesus. And lo and behold, after the events that happened, we've got to tell somebody about this. We've got to find somebody in authority. So that would have been a natural source for them to go to. Who else would they have gone to? Chief priests, they're religious. They've got authority. They've got the connections. So logically, to me, it would have made sense for them to pursue the people who are in that position. Anybody else? Okay, let's go back and then lay out some other things. We've got about 6 minutes left. When we think about what happened to Jesus' body, there really were limited possibilities. As we talked about the fact that the idea that the apostles or the disciples took the corpse from a tomb covered by a giant rock with guarding soldiers, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And then you have to add to that, if the disciples had done that, why? As the disciples begin to preach and teach about the resurrection, what happens? Remember the mocking that we talked about in Acts chapter 17? They're locked up. They're beaten. We don't know exactly how they died, but they were not treated very well, and perhaps they suffered to the point of death for a lie. And they didn't get anything for it. They didn't get rich off of it. They were not promised some kind of government pension. They didn't get a mansion over there by the sea. So it makes no sense. Somebody says, well, if they didn't take it, then the disciples of Jesus, or the... officials must have taken it. Well, how well does that square? That would have been the last thing they wanted. The only reason that they would have taken that would have been to say, here's the body, we'll put it on display. And if you have any questions about a resurrected Christ, here's Jesus. Look, you can see the nail imprints and you can see the spear and you will recognize him from the time that you had spent with him. Two, as we think about the options that we're looking at, some would say, well, Jesus really didn't die. He was just kind of, you know, hurt badly. Well, that also has some difficulties, doesn't it? Remember what we've heard, read, when it comes to the Lord's table, sermons, classes, Jesus, how he was treated prior to the cross. He was beaten. There were the stripes. There was the crown of thorns that was beaten on his head. Peter describes the wound so bad by his stripe, literally Greek text, you're healed. And then he goes to the cross. Soldiers come along. Jesus had only been on the cross for about 6 hours. They realized he was dead. No need to break his legs. And then they put the spear into his side. So you start tying all this stuff together, and you have to say, well, okay. You know, Jesus did die, and he was buried, and yes, there was a tomb. What happened to the body? The resurrection makes sense, and it's the only option that makes sense. Somebody says, well, okay, that all seems pretty convincing to me, but I'd like just a little more proof. Is there anything else that you can offer as far as evidence? Well, let's think about a special man who lived in Tarsus. What was his name? Saul. All right, who was Saul? From Philippians chapter 3, he says, I was a Hebrew of Hebrews. I went to school. I had the training. I had the ancestry. And if someone was going to be a first-class Jew, Paul says, who was it going to be me? Who was it going to be? I'll give you the answer. It was going to be me. I was. I had achieved. I obtained. And Paul said, not only had I obtained, but he said, as far as my relation to Christians, I persecuted them even to the point of going to what kind of city? Anybody remember that? Okay, he went to Damascus. He says, foreign city. That is, I was willing to go outside my local area to persecute Christians. So he is dead set against Christians. He talks about the fact that he imprisoned them, he beat them, and he mistreated them in every possible way. And yet, as we see the book of Acts unfolding, what happens to this guy? He's converted. And is he a so-so Christian? Oh yeah, Jesus, I'll show up on Easter Sunday. No! What happens to him? All right, he begins to speak boldly very early. And not only does he begin to speak boldly, what's he become? He becomes an apostle. And he becomes an apostle who writes a little bit, doesn't he? He writes about half the New Testament. So how do you go from way over here to way over here? Somebody say, well, he was a crazy man. No, that doesn't line up. But he claims that it was a resurrection of Christ that turned him around. And then, in addition to that, as you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, we're not going to read it, but as you start with verse 1 and read down through about verse 20, you'll find that there are about 514 witnesses to the resurrection of Christ. 514. And as you begin to examine what Paul says about the witnesses in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, he shows that these were not hallucinations. These were people who were not affected by some kind of hoax, but these individuals, they'd seen Jesus under various circumstances at various times, hundreds of people all at once. On at least one occasion, they had the chance to eat with him, they had the chance to talk with him, they had the chance to check him out. And then, let's go back to a passage in the book of Acts, which we looked at some weeks ago. This is Acts chapter 1. Let's look at verse 3. Acts chapter 1, verse 3. Anybody turn back there and like to read it? Betty? With the apostles. Jesus, after the resurrection, appeared to these fellows over a period of about how long? 40 days. Now, I don't know about you, but if I had somebody appear to me over about 40 days in various circumstances and we're talking about different things, there's interaction there. It's not some hallucination, but this is someone that I can actually interact with, get feedback from, have a conversation with for more than a month. If you had that experience, how convinced would you be about the resurrection of Christ? 100%. I am willing to lay down my life. I am willing to say I believe with 100% certainty that Jesus is raised from the dead. And that's exactly what the apostles did as they went to the various places described in the book of Acts. And today, based on the evidence that I tried to just kind of highlight for us, we have sufficient proof, more than sufficient proof to show that Jesus has been really raised from the dead. And that's one of the messages that we should also take into the world. Christ has been raised from the dead. Do you believe in the resurrection or not? If you do, Christ needs to be Lord of your life. If not, well, there's probably not much hope that we have for you.